Welcome back to the Warren County Radio Bible School, and today we have our special feature in which we read from the Rockcliffe Review. Now, the Rockcliffe Review is the bulletin we pass out at the Church of Christ at Rockcliffe to all those attend on the Sunday mornings, and it's filled with different news events about what's happening among this family of God that meets in this meeting house. But also, every week in the Rockcliffe Review, I try to write an article that is instructive, and particularly an article that has something to do with a sermon that will be preached that morning. And this time, the name of the article is, "The Desert Shall Rejoice." Well, let me read the article and you'll see what we're talking about. The burdens of Isaiah's judgments against the nations that began in Isaiah 13 come to a close in Isaiah chapters 34 and 35. Isaiah wants all the earth to hear what he has to say, Isaiah 34:1. In his burden, he singles out the Edomia and Bozra. It is fairly suggested that he is using Edom as a representative of all nations whom he has been speaking. Isaiah tells of God's fury coming on them as a destructive army in Isaiah 34, verses 2 through 3, and as though this would be the end of their world. All the host of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their hosts shall fall down as the leaf falleth off the vine, and as the falling fig from the fig tree, Isaiah 34, 4. Such language is typical of the downfall of earthly rulers and is used in Revelation 6, verses 13 and 14, where John wrote, "The stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind, and the heavens departed as a scroll when it is rolled." Isaiah writes of the slain as sacrifices of lambs, goats, rams, bullocks, and bulls. The King James Version includes unicorns. These are now thought to be a kind of wild ox. The land will be turned into a desert of pitch, brimstone, and burning pitch. It shall not be quenched night and day. The smoke thereof shall go up forever and ever, Isaiah 34, 8 through 10. Again, John uses such language in Revelation 14, 10 through 11. "And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels, and in the presence of the Lamb, and the smoke of their torment ascendeth up forever and ever. They shall call for nobles and princes, but none shall be there. It will have become a land of thorns and nettles and brambles," Isaiah 34 and verse 13. Wild animals that will inhabit this desolation include the cormorant, the bittern, the owl, the raven, a habitation of dragons, and a court of owls, the satyr, the screech owl, the great owl, and the vulture, Isaiah 34, 11 through 13, through 15. Translators have a difficult time knowing how to identify the animals of these ancient words. According to the American Standard Version, the cormorant and bittern may be a pelican or porcupine. The dragons and owls may be jackals and ostriches, and the great owl may be a dart snake. The King James Version mentions the satyr. This is a mythical man-goat. Modern versions call this a wild goat. But I read that in the ancient languages akin to the Hebrew, this is a goat demon. You know, Jesus said, "When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places." The message is clear. This is not going to be a good place. Isaiah says, "Seek ye out the book of the Lord and read. None of these things shall fail," Isaiah 34, 16 through 17. He's telling them that when they see these things come to pass, they can go back and read in his book that these things were prophesied. But then Isaiah tells us, the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. For in the wilderness shall waters break out and streams in the desert. And the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. Isaiah 35, verse 1 and verses 6 and 7. The land will be as luxurious as Lebanon, Carmel, and Sharon. Isaiah 35 and verse 2. Having this hope, he encouraged the righteous, strengthened the weak hands, and confirmed the feeble knees. Isaiah 35 and verse 3. Such language is used to encourage the chastened saints in Hebrews 12 and verse 12. Isaiah says, the eyes of the blind shall be open, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as an hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. Isaiah 35, 5 and 6. These were the signs the Jews were looking for when Jesus came. Matthew 11 and verse 3. Isaiah further says, and an highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The redeemed shall walk there, and the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion. Isaiah 35, verses 8 through 10. This coming to Zion returns us again to Isaiah's prophecy of Pentecost in Isaiah 2. This is fulfilled in Acts 2. Some suggest that this is the Jews returning to Jerusalem from Babylonian captivity. If that be so, then this return is typical of the new kingdom that came with Christ. These burdens of Isaiah end with spiritual joy, with joy, with song and everlasting joy upon the heads, shall they obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. Isaiah 35 and verse 10. Such is the joy of the church in its triumph, as described in Revelation 21:4. God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. Well, now that's just pieces of what was being preached that morning at the church at Rock Cliff. I read to you from the Rock Cliff Review, because the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m. All are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. And in this Bible school, we're studying, of course, the Bible, but we're using as a little guide to help us in our studies old Sunday school lessons written by E.A. Elam. And I have a little Sunday school book that he wrote called Elam's Notes for the Sunday Schools of 1926. And we're looking at the introductory material to these lessons. And here is a very timely lesson on the story of Easter. Here's what Elam wrote. Since every year the International Sunday School lessons call for an Easter lesson, just so often it becomes necessary to explain Easter to all students of these lessons that they may understand its origin. In making this explanation, historical references which has been given must be given again and again. There is no story of Easter in the Bible. Easter and Easter services do not come from the Bible. The word Easter is found in the King James Version of the New Testament in Acts 12 and verse 4. This is the only place in which it appears in the Bible. Verse 3 of the chain chapter speaks of the days of unleavened bread, which is the Jewish Passover, and which shows that Easter, of verse 4, is the same as the Jewish Passover. All the use made of it here is to show when Peter was in prison and when Herod intended to behead him. How then did the word Easter get into the King James Version at this place? When this version was made in 1611, the Church of England was observing Easter as a religious ordinance, and at the time the Jews kept their Passover. Because Jesus arose from the dead then, and the men who made this version put Easter instead of a Passover. The word in the original is the one for Passover, and the Revised Version properly puts it, Passover. There were no Easter services, and no Easter in the days of Peter, or when the New Testament was written. Neither is there any connection between the Jewish Passover and the day called Easter or Easter services. And if there were, Christians are not commanded to keep the Passover. The Passover has been fulfilled in Christ, who has been sacrificed as the Christian Passover. 1 Corinthians 5, verses 7 through 8. Then the story of Easter is of human origin, not of Bible origin. Man and not God ordained this service after Christ built his church and had given the New Testament sealed by his blood and had given therefore all that people can do to be in obedience to God and man in their wisdom. And in addition to the Word of God, man began to ordain feasts and fast and commemorate principal events in the life of Christ, like his birth and his circumcision and the coming of the wise men and his baptism and his first miracle and his death called his passion, his resurrection and his ascension and his glorification. Humanity seems prone to celebrate noted events and marked epochs. It seems just as prone also to neglect and even reject God's requirements and to institute ways and laws of its own. To honor God and Christ is to obey them and to trustfully follow their wisdom. It is self-glorification to follow human ways and human wisdom. It is astonishing to learn that the heathen origin of some of these celebrations, the name Easter, also comes from Ostara, the goddess of the morning light, a return of the sun in spring. That's according to Fisher's Church History, page 145, of fast and feast. Fisher, in his church history, says, fast, at first voluntary, came to be ordained by church law. The Christian festival related to Christ and commemorated the principal events of his life with his death, resurrection, and ascension to glory. The first yearly festival generally observed was Easter, standing in the room of the ancient Passover. After Easter followed Pentecost, lasting for 50 days and commemorating the glorification of Jesus. After the 14th day was kept as a memorial of his ascension. About the end of this period, the beginning of the 4th century, two new festivals came in. One was Epiphany, originating in the East, but improperly with Jewish Christians, and commemorating the baptism of Christ. The other was Christmas, a festival of Roman origin, taking the place of the heathen festival in honor of the sun or of the deity bearing that name, which was celebrated at the winter solstice, or on December 25th, or the time erroneously assigned for the solstice in the Julian calendar. This was during the period of 100 to 313. During the next period, from 313 to 590, Fisher says, Friday continued to be kept in memory of Christ's passion. The first feast of the year was Epiphany, the manifestation which is in the East connected itself with Christ's baptism, while in the West, where it later appeared, it commemorated the coming of the wise men and the first expedition of miraculous power in Canaan. Christmas originated in the West and from there passed over into Eastern churches. many Christians still took part of the heathen festival of the New Year.